Brokaw Show with Anna DeBlantis, yes, right here on 720 WGN. Home of Game of Thrones knowledge, which is only good for the next hour and a half. After that, nobody will care.
It had a good run.
It did have a good run. Thank you, Kevin
Powell. Excellent run.
All right. A.B. Stoddard joins us right now. She doesn't care about any of this. The Game of Thrones that she cares about are happening in Washington, D.C. right now. And wow, what a as America devotes its attention to a fantasy that takes place ostensibly 600 years ago, we now turn our attention back to what we missed over the last couple of weeks while we were watching Game of Thrones, and it's a lot. A couple things happened today that I think are of note, and I'd like to get your thought on them that are just breaking now. First of all, a federal judge has sided with the House. With a House committee that is looking for Trump Organization financial papers and saying that, yes, they got to hand them over. That's going to get that. I'm sure they still won't be handed over, and another judge will have to look at that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's been an unbelievable Monday. There's more news about the investigation into the Trump inaugural committee, and Trump is basically putting his foot down, insisting that Don McGahn, his former White House counsel, defy the congressional subpoena. As we learn of this ruling from this judge saying that the Trump administration can't block a congressional subpoena for his financial statements, it's just an incredible historic clash that there's no signs that either side is going to back down, perhaps. This ruling will give the Democrats a feeling that they should continue on the path that they're on, and that the courts, the third branch of government, will actually support their, you know, Article I constitutionally mandated authority to be a check on the executive, and that they won't need to proceed to the technical impeachment proceeding, which allows them to get their hands on more information. So we've talked about it on your show, and for those who are not following this at the granular level, what happened in Watergate was that they pursued an investigation, an impeachment proceeding, so that they could get the grand jury information. And right now, they can't get Don McGahn, they can't get the grand jury information. The attorney general is not supportive of them getting. He's not trying to help them, and so they have been under pressure to begin that technical process, even if they never have a vote, so that they get their hands on more information. So this ruling tonight is interesting. It may encourage them to sort of continue to cool their heels on that. But that
doesn't mean they're going to get it, though.
No, right. And it doesn't mean they'll just hope. Yeah. You're right. I mean, there's burning pressure now on the Democrats to proceed to that next step, even if they, you know, never are going to hold a vote, though, because they are going to get their hands on this information and compel Don McGahn and Bob Mueller and everything else I just mentioned. They're not going to back down. So
but can't they play a game here? Can't the White House play a game with them and say, hey, no, we're just not doing it until, we're not going to do anything until the Supreme Court tells us we have to, and maybe not even then. Right? I mean, that's the kind of posture that you see being taken.
Yeah, they do seem like they're running out the clock. That's all they're
doing. There's no question. It's just a question of, you know, and look, the Democrats are not going to back down either. Do they, you know, lock people up with the help of the sergeant at arms and a small, you know, jail at the Capitol?
Oh,
I don't know where we're going with that. I don't know how Game of Thrones we're going here, but I do think that the judge's language in this ruling about how, you know, it is the power of the Congress that has the power of impeachment to seek and obtain these documents. I think will bolster the case that they might prevail. But you're right; it depends on how quickly these other cases are resolved. And there is pressure that, you know, the idea, if Don McGahn doesn't tell us tonight that he is not going to defy a subpoena and that he's going to stand by the separation of powers and the rule of law, and he's going to come, then if he doesn't testify tomorrow, there's going to be a lot of pressure on the Democrats to proceed like I said, with that at least technical beginning, so that they can, you know, get more information. So, you know, they're in a bad position, but they have no choice. They're not going to back down. It's a question of when they do what. But I think that they're shown that they're willing. I mean, they've shown they're willing to lose. Trump has shown he's willing to lose every swing voter and you know, with all this defiance. And I think the Democrats have shown that they're willing to lose the election, too. And they haven't said they're going to, you know, proceed with impeachment, but it's looking like, you know, that's not far away.
I mean, about Don McGahn. For people who are not really familiar with the very specific players in this, and Don McGahn is certainly not, you know, a household name, I don't think. He had the best haircut, I think, in the entire administration. But and he's a tall, good-looking
man. Musician. He has to have his hair a little bit long,
though. Right. He was a lawyer who, you know, been on the private side of, like, campaign law and stuff like that. He came in to the Trump campaign fairly early on, and because he's from one of the best firms, and he helped with all the campaign law stuff that they had to deal with and bringing them up to speed, because again, a lot of the people around Donald Trump back in 2016 were political amateurs, right? And or people who, you know, failed and, you know, probably should have or certainly will now go to jail. But because all the big people were with the other candidates, right? They were with Cruz or with Bush or with, you know, some of the other campaigns. So McGahn did come in, and McGahn was probably the biggest adult in the room in early 2016 for the Trump campaign. And then he made him the White House counsel, which and McGahn, you know, to my eye, never seemed like he was really all that enamored with the idea of it, but he was doing a job. And then he got in, and he got into a number of fights that have been now essayed in all of those books that have been written about the trouble in the White House, the palace intrigue stuff. And, you know, he eventually leaves the White House, and he was the White House counsel, which is not the private lawyer for Donald Trump. It is the lawyer for the presidency. Right. And
well, that was news to Donald Trump. Yeah,
right.
But you're right.
And so now he's out. And the question is, it seems to me that Don McGahn is the kind of guy who, you know, kind of understands the throw of history here, might just stop and go, listen, what is he going to do to me? What's the worst he can do to me? And what's the worst of these people? You know, remember that Trump has fans and followers. He doesn't necessarily have people who are going to, you know, have any, once he's gone, it's like when Game of Thrones is gone, where do the fans go? They go to other things. They go to other politicians along the way. But these are not necessarily powerful entities that these fans represent. And I don't think that there's really that much of a risk in taking on Donald Trump, if I'm Don McGahn.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because the reporting out tonight shows that Trump has been threatening to sort of injure Jones Day, Don McGahn's law firm, which is so that it, you know, its influence in Republican circles is diminished. This is sort of a big parlor game, right? Is Don McGahn going to be that person? Is it going to be John Dean? John McGahn was asked right after the Bill Barr summary was released in late March about the Mueller report to come. He was asked by the White House to come out right away and say there was no obstruction, and he declined. He said through his lawyers he didn't feel pressure, but he declined to do that, even though he has said that he didn't feel that Trump was trying to obstruct justice. The problem is, if he were to go and testify, they will be asking him why he told Priebus, Reince Priebus, the chief of staff, and Steve Bannon, the then counselor, whatever, his chief strategist, that he was threatening to resign. Why did he use, you know, terms like crazy, you know, S-word to describe what Trump was asking him to do? Trump had called him and asked him to call Rod Rosenstein because Mueller had to go. So that testimony would be very damaging to sort of this moment and this narrative. There's no question. And so we are going to see what the effect of that pressure is. People have already been concerned. Some on President Trump's staff in April that his tweets about Don McGahn, you know, was basically witness intimidation, calling him a liar, basically saying that, like, Mueller was never get fired, but McGahn was maybe going to get fired. So we don't know if he's been intimidated, and we don't know if he's We don't know what he's going to do. I'm thinking he's going to not come.
I got to just stop this whole insanity right now. And I just want to say this. You know, when Donald Trump goes away, the Republican Party will still stand. It's going to look a little different, and it may act a little different, but it is not going to be there. Jones Day or the other law firms or accounting firms or other, you know, businesses that get associated with parties, you know, because they're doing work for them. And a lot of these big law firms work for both sides, right? You got lawyers on, you know, they hire lawyers who are big players, you know, on both Democrats and Republicans because they want the business. That Donald Trump will not be able to, in the specter of Donald Trump will not be powerful. It won't be, because he's not going to be a legacy president. He's going to be a flash in the pan moment. There will be some successes. There are going to be some failures, and there are going to be some moments that America will just never want to revisit. And I think that, so whatever he thinks he's going to do, I think that these people have to have the long, they have to kind of take the Chinese view on this and look, you know, look a little further into the future than 2020.
I, you know, of course, you and I always agree on these matters, but look at congressional Republicans. Have they taken the long view?
No, they haven't.
At the other side of this, they're going to want, as we've said so many times, they're going to want the truth. They're going to want the facts. They're going to want the rule of law. They're going to want credibility. They're going to want the moral high ground. They're going to want all these things they've given away. Watching the way that they have come after Congressman Amash of Michigan is so unfathomable to me. Of course, I thought that they would run for their, you know, run into the trunks of their cars and then be missing and be busy and not answer reporters' questions. I thought when pressed they would respectfully disagree. I was actually horrified to see the way that they have come out to make sure that everybody knows that the RNC, not only the chairwoman but her spokeswoman, you know, allies like Dan Bongino will go on Fox and say leave the party. Everyone will come after you, get a primary challenger, and then the lead Republican in the House, Kevin McCarthy, will say it's so disturbing, you know, he's wrong. I mean, no one said I respectfully disagree with Justin Amash.
Justin Amash is a Republican.
After him.
He's a Republican congressman who over the weekend called for the impeachment of Donald Trump and said that he obstructed justice based on
He's crossed the impeachment threshold with his obstruction, which is what the 1,000 bipartisan group of former prosecutors have said as well, that Mueller has showed us with the report all these, you know, things that technically meet the threshold of obstruction. So it's like no one's taking a long view.
No, I get that. But I think what they're looking at, too, is that people will forget. Like Republicans are figuring if they lose in the presidency and, you know, maybe some more seats or maybe even the Senate in 2020, people will eventually forget that, you know, what they stood for. And then they're just going to continue on and, you know, we'll just move on to whatever the next thing is. And they will vilify whoever the president is. Pete Buttigieg will be the, you know, the guy that they go, you don't believe that how he is. Look at how he's trying to be an imperial president. He's trying to be a king. You know, it'll be the whole thing. It's the same stuff that, you know, we've been a party to for the last 20 years of American politics, or even longer than that. All right, we'll leave it there on that. I'm trying to be hopeful, AB.
I will come on your show tomorrow and give you such props if you get Don McGahn to testify. I'm gonna eat my shoes. Yeah. I'm sorry to feel dark about this. He's not coming.
Okay. All right, we'll see. We'll see. Okay. I pray you're probably right. I will not eat my shoes because I think you're right. Thank you, AB. All right, we'll talk to you.
There
she is, a great AB Stoddard. Let us now check in with Kim Gordon. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
And as you were talking about, score one for the Democrats in the fight over the president's financial records.